This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Any stigma around marijuana has softened, at least somewhat, in recent years as more people turn to it for medicinal reasons. This weekend, the history and impact of cannabis will be explored during a symposium at the Lloyd Library in downtown Cincinnati. The history of cannabis, its versatility, and how women used it prior to prohibition are all part of the planned program. So let's preview the event with University of Cincinnati Biological Sciences Department Professor and Department Head, Dr. Teresa Coley, who's in the studio. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you, Michael.
CCV Research President and CEO, Dr. Jonathan Cachet. He's on Skype. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you. Hey, thanks. Great to be here.
And the Cannabis Museum Project Director, Elizabeth Crow, who joins us on the phone. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So glad you could make it. If you have questions about marijuana or cannabis or the history or any of the discussion that we have this afternoon, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those in the show as well. So, Teresa, the symposium coming up this weekend, what is it? Why?
Yeah, it's, I think, a really important symposium. It's just talking about cannabis. Obviously, it's been in the news for many different reasons. But really what the symposium does is it dives a little deeper. So we'll be talking, for example, my section, I'll be talking a lot about the use of cannabis throughout the centuries. A lot of people don't realize that. And we'll have other experts talking about different areas that they're familiar with
and
as well.
We're going to dive into some of those as we proceed for sure. And the Lloyd Library is a place that's known for its documentations of botany and plants and so forth. And do you think that people's interest in cannabis is growing?
Oh, definitely. No, definitely. I teach a medical botany class for many, many years now, and I have seen, at least on the student end, a lot of interest has been growing. As you know, the climate has been shifting rapidly in terms of accepting the use of medical marijuana in particular, and here in the state of Ohio, that's become important as well. So yes, I think a lot of people are sort of perking up and catching notice and wanting to learn more.
Jonathan, what do you think is driving this newfound interest in cannabis?
You know, I would say that I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as newfound. I think there's always sort of been an interest in cannabis, throughout human history, more or less. But what we're seeing now is the development of an industry with numerous different business license types, and of course, jobs and workforce development that goes along with that. While cannabis is the main subject of focus, this is an opportunity for people to get in at growing and agriculture, at chemistry with the testing labs, engineering and formulation and product development with processors, and then even, retail outlets at the dispensaries. So, there's pretty much an opportunity at any point in the supply chain as the cannabis industry develops here in Ohio.
Well, and this is purely anecdotal, of course, but just I think about, friends in college who wouldn't have thought twice about discussing cannabis or marijuana or opportunities to acquire some. Whereas now you hear about, maybe your middle-aged coworker is talking about her elderly mother and kind of whispering, how do I get some of this? Would this be helpful? I mean, that seems to be a cultural shift to me.
Certainly a cultural shift. But, everybody is at least, one step removed or knows someone who could potentially benefit from medical cannabis. And, we'd be careful not to talk about it as a panacea. But for the aging population, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, MS, any of these neurodegenerative diseases, modern medicine currently starts with, a pharmaceutical approach, and there's nothing wrong with that pharmaceutical approach, but it comes with risks and benefits, and you got to weigh the risks with the benefits. The nice thing about medical cannabis is that the benefits could be phenomenal. It could retard or prevent the progression of Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. The risks are very low, extremely low. There's no overdose risk. You're not going to stop breathing. You hear people joke about it all the time, but it's just the case that you might get tired and sleep really well, or you might get a bowl of cereal and sit on the couch for the rest of the day.
I don't know anything about that. Elizabeth, you're the director of the Cannabis Museum Project, and I'm curious, are the words cannabis and marijuana pretty much interchangeable?
Well, marijuana has a is kind of derogatory. It has a history of being used in a racial put down situation. Cannabis is the medical term, and marijuana is a negative term.
Okay, so how did that come to be?
Well, historically, on the onset of prohibition, cannabis was referred to as marijuana, so that people weren't associating the cannabis that they were using consistently throughout time with this marijuana substance that was being seen as a negative, making women loose, causing horrible scandals and people robbing one another.
And Teresa, I saw you shake your head a little bit too when I asked whether those two words are interchangeable.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. It's actually a little bit more to the story too, which I find fascinating, is cannabis itself, the plant has been around for thousands of years. And so it's known also, you know, nowadays, of course, of marijuana, but another term is hemp. And so you might have heard about hemp growing, and that's become really, really popular. But in fact, marijuana, or we should say cannabis here in this case, has been around, you know, for such a long time. In fact, that's what a lot of the naval superpower countries, that's what they would grow is hemp, because they needed it to make the ropes and the sails of their ships. So, for example, the Spanish Armada and, you know, the English Navy, they all had to have all these huge hemp fields. So we actually... The plant itself, cannabis, has been around and tied to civilization for, I would say, tens of thousands of years, depending on how you look at that.
And so that sort of deepens, I guess, the confusion about the term. So if cannabis is more along the lines of the botanical terminology for what we commonly refer to as marijuana, hemp is a related byproduct from the same plant?
It's a different form. Yeah, you can talk about it. People talk about different groups. And it gets a little bit more complicated because... botanists, we like to argue sometimes and to discuss
I'd like to see
things.
A flower expert argument. I bet that's a lot of fun.
It is interesting. But people actually disagree as to whether there's one species, Cannabis sativa, or whether there's three. And so you see people go back and forth. Now we're looking a little bit more into the molecular end of that. But generally what we believe is that, you know, whether you think there's one or three species, that they can be classified into two separate groups. So you have the hemp category, which legally, by the way, has to have 0.3% of THC or lower to be classified as hemp. And then the marijuana categories, which are grown primarily for the THC. So, and those usually have anywhere from 3 to 25%.
And so we are seeing medical marijuana be more widely accepted across the country. A lot of states have made it legal. Some states and jurisdictions have allowed for the recreational use of marijuana as well. Kentucky has not allowed any form of legal use of marijuana, but hemp is a huge issue now in Kentucky. And so Senator Mitch McConnell led the federal fight, while the agriculture commissioner in the state led a fight to kind of create this resurgence of hemp in Kentucky. But I attended an event where Senator McConnell was speaking, and he was endorsing hemp, but referred to marijuana as hemp's illicit cousin. So now I wonder if, I mean, you have one of the most powerful politicians in the world calling marijuana, cannabis, illicit. Yeah. Is the stigma really diminishing at all? And let's give this question to Jonathan, start to mix it up a little.
I think that the stigma is diminishing immensely. You know, I think that, you know, I don't think when it comes to hemp and cannabis, they are the same plant. And I really appreciate what was mentioned earlier in that we're starting to look at the chemical profile. So the totality of cannabinoids and terpenes that are inside of the plant. You know, hemp, we grow for CBD. We got to have low levels of THC. But there's also, 140 additional cannabinoids that we haven't even begun to touch the surface on. So THCV or CBDV or CBT. Strain names, so Blue Dream or Skywalker or Pineapple Express, really, those were just easy ways for us humans to, you know, say that these have different chemical profiles. And really, the, you know, some of the most exciting work being done at the analytical laboratories at this point is figuring out how those terpenes and cannabinoids come together to make what is a therapeutically valuable product, but sort of true to type in its cultivar, its strain, or genetics. Ohio itself actually is just passed SB 57 through the Senate. It's now in the House, and we will be having a hemp program, and farmers in Ohio will be able to grow hemp for fiber or for CBD here in Ohio probably by the next growing season. We're a little bit late on the growing season now.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you've got questions or comments about today's program. Elizabeth, I want to know what the Cannabis Museum Project is.
Well, the Cannabis Museum, we're a 501c3 organization. Our founder and collector, Don Wurschafter, is a pioneer in the cannabis industry. He's been collecting these artifacts for over 30 years. We have at least 1,300 historical medicine bottles with cannabis in them. We have a vast library of historical cannabis medical texts. We have historical medical journals, botanicals, and various other treasures related to cannabis. And we've been working on researching for the past several years, and we're getting ready to have our own museum in the near future.
And the symposium coming up this weekend is part of an exhibit as well through the prescription bottle. And we're going to talk about some of the items that we're going to see there, as well as some of the programming that is going to be part of that just ahead. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Cannabis, the botanical name for marijuana, is the focus of a symposium in downtown Cincinnati this weekend. Why? Let's continue the conversation now with University of Cincinnati Biological Sciences Department Professor and Department Head Dr. Teresa Culley, CCV Research President and CEO Dr. Jonathan Cachet, and the Cannabis Museum Project Director Elizabeth Crow. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Talk at WVXU.org is our email. Facebook and Twitter, we'll find your comments and your tweets there and try to get some of those in the show. Let's go to the phones now and get a question from Stephanie. Hey, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. What's your question?
Yeah, they were speaking earlier about the benefits of medicinal marijuana for like elderly populations that have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and various diseases, and how, you know, oftentimes it's relaxing and it induces sleep and good things like that. However, I mean, is the medicinal marijuana different than like street marijuana? Because in my life, I've had lots of friends, and even myself when I was young, it actually had the reverse effect on me. It made me very anxious and paranoid, and not, I just was curious if the medicinal does not have that same byproduct as, like, you know, the marijuana that people would just buy on the street.
Okay, Stephanie, we'll hang up and let the gang answer that question. I think it was Jonathan who mentioned that some of those ailments that marijuana could be used to help with. So, Jonathan, you heard Stephanie's question. She wanted to know if the marijuana may cause some anxiety in addition to some of the medicinal benefits.
Yeah, it's a great question. And so, you know, the first thing about a safe access state-regulated medical marijuana program is that the products that you're purchasing from a licensed dispensary have undergone significant safety testing, so analytics and safety testing. So we know there aren't any pesticides. We know there aren't any heavy metals. We know there aren't any potential mold or mildew, fungus. And we also know the exact concentration of THC, CBD, and at this point, the terpenes as well. So the difference between going, you know, down the alleyway and getting a bag and sort of it either is or isn't, or it's good or it's not, When you go to a safe access dispensary that the state of Ohio has now got out there for Ohio patients, you know that your product's safe and you know exactly what it is that you're consuming. We like to call that informed consumption. Beyond that, it really took me going out to California and sort of getting exposed to the variety. Many people make an argument that cannabis has a more diverse sort of flavor, taste, and effect profile than what you would find in grapes and wine or even craft beer. So, you know, I like to say that, you know, if you smoked it once in college and you got paranoid and you were anxious, you know, it could just be a case that you were, you know, you got a hangover because you were drinking the well vodka. There is an enormous diversity in not only the type of cannabis in terms of flower for vaporization, the edibles, tinctures, lotions, transdermal patches. So there are a number of ways to consume it that aren't just smoking. But there are also an enormous array of variations from fruity, tangies, and strawberries, all the way down to some really, you know, sort of more musty floral flavors of cannabis. And all of those terpenes and cannabinoids come together to make the resultant effects. And so I'll just close in saying, you know, cannabis isn't for everyone. You know, certainly if you have a bad experience or it's not helping you and you don't like the way it makes you feel, you know, you're not obligated to consume it by any means. But I would say don't give up on the first try. Go back and try something on the exact opposite end of the cannabinoid and terpene profile.
Jonathan, I also went to Los Angeles last summer and observed one of these shops and found it very interesting that there's basically a full menu and expert people on staff to detail the intended effects of each one. If you wanted to calm down, if you wanted to be more excitable, it seemed like they had a variety of strains for consumption. So I thought that was interesting as well. And I believe it must be a result of a more regulated market.
Well, you know, really the folks up in Northern California have been breeding and selecting cannabis phenotypes for generations, you know, 3, 4, 5 generations. And so we do have to thank the black market for the diversity of products that we have now. What we can thank the regulated market for is now the selection pressures aren't just to elevate THC as high as you possibly can, because that's what gets you high and that's what sells on the black market. But actually, let's make a THC strain that's like 14% to 12%, and let's see what we can do with different light spectrums or growth environmental conditions to get specific terpenes to come out. So rather than all of that breeding being pushed towards high THC levels, a safe, regulated market allows us to explore that variety and bring things down in a more diverse way.
Teresa, some people's interest in marijuana may be relatively new because it has dominated news cycles for the past few years while legislatures consider how to proceed on legalization. But marijuana in this land goes back farther than before we called this land the United States of America. So what were some of the early uses of this plant?
Yeah, exactly. So the plant itself, we think, probably originated in Central Asia, that type of area. And then it was transported to various areas of the world. The Chinese, for example, were using cannabis for both medicinal use, but also as paper and other rope, as we mentioned earlier. And that was thousands of years earlier. Then it got transported to other countries, the Arab world it went to, and then finally it went over to England. It went pretty much all over. It went to Africa. Eventually, then it was brought over to the United States. And that's actually just really quickly an interesting story, because the colonists were actually encouraged to grow hemp primarily for the English Navy. And so we always think about the Tea Party and things like that, but hemp was actually part of that whole conversation as well. So yes, hemp has been here in the United States actually for a long time. So cannabis as hemp is what we're talking about, not necessarily cannabis as marijuana.
When did we start using cannabis as marijuana in this country?
So that has interesting history too. As was alluded to earlier, there's some negative stereotypes around it.
Yeah.
Marijuana has been here probably, well, before Prohibition. And it's been, you know, used in back alleys and so forth. And so a lot of people who talk about, sort of like the caller we have earlier, talk about their experience with marijuana is, you know, on the street. And I think what was alluded to earlier is the marijuana that we have right now that we're dealing with is a much different thing. All these different cultivars, they've been selected for different strains, different amounts of the chemicals. And so it is very different than what we have had in the past.
Elizabeth, at this weekend's symposium, there is an exhibit through the prescription bottle. What are some of those items that we're going to see in there?
We're going to see apothecaries from about the early 18th century up until Prohibition. We're going to see advertisements for cannabis. We're going to see medicines that are examples of the patent medicine area, a type of Wild West of medicine where there were various ingredients in the medicines. We're going to see the development of glass through this period of time when we came to industrialized pharmaceuticals and medicine was made very rapidly and widely dispersed. We will be showing a lot of examples from the beginning of Prohibition when cannabis was outlawed.
And when you say prohibition, we don't necessarily think of marijuana prohibition. We're thinking of alcohol prohibition. But I think I saw that marijuana was prohibited in around 1937, which is a different timeline than alcohol.
Correct. Correct. Cannabis was prohibited at this point, and then excuse me. Yes, it is a different period of time, and they're different.
Jonathan, can you tell us about the Ohio Medical Marijuana Control Program?
Yeah, sure. So we are currently in the rollout phase of Ohio's medical marijuana program. The state legislature passed HB 523 some 2 years ago, and that established several business license types. So we have cultivators who actually grow the cannabis plant. There are a total of 29 cultivators in the state of Ohio, and 17 of those are actively cultivating cannabis. About 60% of the grows are up and online. Of the dispensaries, we have 56 dispensaries. 15 of those are now open as of today. So about 27%, so 15 out of 56. In terms of the processors, so the processors are the ones who buy the flower, the raw plant material from the cultivators, and then extract the oil and other valuable medicinal compounds out of the plant and put those into any number of products approved by Ohio's medical marijuana program. So tinctures, gel caps, lotions, balms, vaporizer cartridges. Processors, there are two processors that currently have their certificate of operation, and there will be currently 39 that have a provisional license. So there's only about 5% of the processors that are on the market right now, or at least actively processing product. And for a number of Ohio patients, getting their hands on those processed products, is their goal. So I know there's some consternation and frustration with the rollout and the speed at which things are rolling out and the prices that things cost. But, having been on all sides of this, starting from the regulations to testing lab and now on the production side, the state has really stepped up and is working with the licensees to get things moving along as fast as they can, as far as I can tell. So with only 5% of those processors currently in operation, we have 37 more to come, and there will certainly be more varieties of products, different chemical profiles, and I think prices will come down at that point.
And you were also with Hocking College when that establishment implemented a degree program associated with cannabis. What can you tell us about that?
Indeed, yes. So the last business type in the supply chain, at least as set up, are the testing labs. So we are tasked with performing safety testing, more or less, on all the cannabis products at various points in the supply chain. Hocking College is one of three licensed labs for the medical marijuana program here in Ohio. And yes, while we were there, We designed and developed the nation's first cannabis lab tech associate's degree program. This program is designed to take students interested in working in the cannabis space or the cannabis industry through a very rigorous analytical chemistry program. We make sure that that's very clear both to the students and the parents before they get signed up. But you have to learn, you know, really advanced analytical equipment, you know, high pressure liquid chromatography machines, ICP-MS for detecting lead and arsenic and other heavy metals. And so the program at Hocking is launching in earnest in the fall of 2019. There's been immense interest, as you may imagine, from all over the nation. But really, I designed the program to make sure that they get hands-on workforce development skills on those analytical chemistry and analytical instruments inside of a lab, while also sort of getting the broader picture of our history with cannabis and the business and economics of being a cultivator or a processor. So it's going to be a very well-rounded program and a pathway to prosperity for a number of students who would have maybe never considered that analytical chemistry was in their future.
The symposium is taking place this weekend at the Lloyd Museum, and the Lloyd Museum is named for Lloyd Brothers, a pair of pharmacists from Cincinnati's earlier, a trio. I apologize. I thought I only knew of two, but there were three Lloyd Brothers, apparently. Teresa gave me three fingers there, so thank you for the assist there. And I'm curious, do you know anything about how they might have used cannabis for patients in their era?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. I was just over at the Lloyd this morning trying to answer that question. So one of the brothers, that's why I was saying three, is one is actually a botanist, and he's the one that I'm most familiar with. And he had friends all around the world, and they would send him plants from all over the place. And so we actually do have a specimen of cannabis sativa, although he might call it cannabis indica at that point. I had mentioned the name changes. And so the Lloyd brothers, and we do have some documentation that they actually did explore the cannabis plant itself. And the brothers themselves, they were well known for a variety of different medicines that they would sell. Lloyd Brothers Pharmaceuticals was a big, huge operation here in Cincinnati. And so it's very likely that they actually did work with cannabis. And they've documented, they suggested it not for any of these recreational effects that we've been talking about that people are interested in, or the, more so the medical effects. It was used for pain. It was used for menstrual pain. It was used for dementia in some cases. And so they were exploring those avenues. And it was a very different way of using medicines at that time. But it was primarily, the idea was that plant compounds were pure and they could be used to help medical situations of humans.
We got a call from John, and he's referencing our earlier conversation about how colonial America or pre-colonial America may have consumed the product, and he wanted to know about Native American use of marijuana.
Oh, that's an excellent question. So far, I haven't been able to find anything about Native American use of marijuana. I had mentioned the colonists. We know, for example, George Washington grew hemp. We know that Thomas Jefferson grew hemp. Not marijuana, notice, I said, is hemp. But yeah, I haven't been able to find anything. I would not be surprised to see if there were some use, because we do have a good record of some plants that were brought over by the English and others, and the French, for example, and the Native Americans then would adapt them. That's a good question.
And Elizabeth, this weekend at the symposium, for people who may be relatively new to exploring their curiosity about this topic, what do you think they'll walk away with?
Oh, they'll be fascinated by the vast use of cannabis as a medicine for both sexes for a wide array of ailments. They'll be fascinated about how cannabis was widely used in both obstetrics and gynecology. Cannabis was used historically in labor to alleviate pain and promote contractions. They'll also be pretty interested by the historical figures that are connected loosely with cannabis.
The Cannabis Symposium And the exhibit Through the Prescription Bottle is this weekend at the Lloyd Library in downtown Cincinnati. Details in the Cincinnati Edition section of WVXU.org. Our thanks to University of Cincinnati Biological Sciences Department Professor and Department Head, Dr. Teresa Coley, CCV Research President and CEO, Dr. Jonathan Cachet, and the Cannabis Museum Project Director, Elizabeth Crow. Thanks to all of you for chatting with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.